Okay, so to continue our conversation about Berachos HaMazon, last week I recommended that you have a bencher with you while we go through the text. So we had stopped in the middle of the first bracha last week. We were talking about the Berachos HaZan, the bracha that Moshe Rabbeinu instituted. And I think when we left off, we were talking about the differences between Chen, Chesed, and Rachamim. And that's a specific connection to this week's parsha, when we consider both Moshe Rabbeinu and Chen, because the parsha of Yeschanan, as Rashi indicates, is about Moshe seeking Chen, is about seeking this extra attention from the Ribono Shel Olam, which is invoked here in the bracha, as we discussed last week, different levels of God's favor, whether it's the chen, the above and beyond, whether it's the chesed that comes from kindness, or it's the lowest level, in a sense, the rachamim that is given to those essentially receiving compassion. But to continue from there, so there is an interesting machlokas that's brought, if you see in the middle of the bracha, let's turn to the words, Lo chaser lanu v'al yechser lanu mazon. So in the Magen Avram, in the commentary on the side of the Shulchan Aruch, he has a discussion of how exactly that should be pronounced. We pronounced it lo chaser lanu v'al yechser lanu mazon, but he had suggested, and quoted an opinion, that perhaps it should be pronounced lo chisar lanu v'al yechasar lanu. And the idea being, the idea being that we have to figure out what each word refers to. So perhaps the first word, lo chaser lanu, really is referring to God not depriving us of his food. And that's why maybe it should have been pronounced lo chisar lanu. And the next word, that would have referred to God not depriving us of himself. And therefore, maybe it should have been yechaser lanu. However, for reasons of following the path of Psukim, so we have it the other way around, so we understand the second part, lo yechzer lanu, that's about not depriving us of the food, and that's why it continues with the language of mazon, lo yechzer lanu mazon. But that first phrase, lo chaser lanu, that's referring, as we pronounce it, to HaKadosh Baruch Hu himself. He is not absent to us. And as we also discussed last week, that this entire first bracha is a recognition of God's presence in our lives and of God's special connection to the Jewish people and his involvement in the entire world. And therefore, to emphasize that he is not absent to us, that's the message in the bracha. And then we go on to say that Bavur Shmo HaGadol, Ki Hu El Zan Mefarnes Lakol, Umeitiv Lakol, Umechin Mazon, Lechol Briosav Asher Bara. So he is Zan, all of creation, and he prepares Mazon. And there is much discussion as to how to understand those phrases together, Zan and Mechin Mazon. And the Haggadah of Reb David Cohen, Berachos Yavetz, so he notes that the Gemara suggests that mazon is a more absolute language than zon, and that what we're saying is that he sustains us all on a basic level. But mechin mazon, he also prepares a much more elaborate nutrition for us, and that's what we hope to be able to merit. So there is the basic and there is the potential. And we thank him for the continued existence of the basic sustenance. And we recognize also that there is a potential that we can earn that we are striving for. The other comments as well about this idea of Mechin Mazon, the Meshech Chachma suggests that this is part of a Halachta Bedrachav, that we are told to imitate God. And the Talmud Yerushalmi tells us that if we acquire an animal, we should make sure first to establish that we can feed the animal, that we have enough food to supply to the animal. And we see that this is what HaKadosh Baruch Hu did, that when he made the world, so first he put in all the vegetation and he put in all the animals, and only then he created humanity. So he made sure that first there was the possibility of feeding his creation. And so too, we are supposed to copy that, v'alach d'bedrachav, and if we were to acquire an animal, we should make sure that we're prepared as well. So we highlight that that's what God did. He was mechin mazon. He prepared a world that had sustenance in it before we were even created in the first place. Now here, there is a interesting discussion to be had about the continuation, which is in parentheses in many benchers, because there's different attitudes as to what to do with it. Kamur posech es yadacha umazbia l'chol chay ratzon. So we alluded to a little bit last week that there is some discussion about that phrase, because this bracha is written by Moshe Rabbeinu. We mentioned that the Mabit asserted that the text that we have today is identical to the text that Moshe Rabbeinu had, Moshe Rabbeinu wrote. And yet, we know that this pasuk, Posech Estitecho Masbiya L'chol Chay Ratzon, that appears later. That appears in Sefer Tehillim from David HaMelech. So how exactly is that the case? So there is a lot of discussion about this. The Beis Yosef quotes from the Kolbo that maintained that we shouldn't say it because it must not be from Moshe Rabbeinu. It must be later edition. It must be from David HaMelech, and therefore it doesn't belong here. But we also mentioned the possibility that the Mabit maintained that Moshe Rabbeinu did say it, and that David HaMelech later fixed it into the text of Tehillim. So there are those who suggest that's why there's this unusual referencing here. Often if we refer to a pasuk, we say Kamosha Kasov, something like that. This idea of Ka'amur is to have the dual reference. And on the one hand, it's a citation to Sefer Tehillim, but on the other hand, it was stated before it was in Sefer Tehillim, so therefore we add the word Ka'amur in order to indicate that. That's how the Brisker Rav was quoted as explaining, and how others suggested. But there are other interpretations as well. The Aruch HaShulchan suggests that that's also connected to this idea of Mechin Mazon L'chol B'Yosav, that HaKadosh Baruch Hu created a world where every creature has an interest in the food that is available to him. So there are various animals and there are human beings, and they have nourishment that is associated with them, and that's what they're interested in. They're interested in eating the food that fits their specific creation. So that's what we recognize HaKadosh Baruch Hu with Mechin Mazon L'chol B'Yosav, that he prepares food for all of his creations. So this is emphasized by what David HaMelech said later when he said, Posech es yadecha umasbia l'chol chai ratzon, that he provides for every creation ratzon, that which they desire. So it's not that there is one size fits all, but every creation wants something else, and HaKadosh Baruch Hu provides that for them. So the addition of this pasuk is a support to the idea of Moshe Rabbeinu. Moshe Rabbeinu said every creature is provided with that which it is interested in, and that's also what David HaMelech would later say, Posech es yadecha umasbia l'chol chai ratzon. There are a number of later svarim that also point to another implication of this pasuk, which is a fascinating idea. I think we mentioned the first week that the Gemara has an unbelievable statement about benching, that we know it's a Torah obligation to bench. God said, V'achalta v'savato v'irachta in Parshas Ekev, that we'll read soon. And the Talmud has this statement about this obligation, that we go above and beyond, that we don't only wait until we're full in order to bench, but by rabbinic law, we bench even on a smaller amount, even on a kezias. And that was so impressive, HaKadosh Baruch Hu said about us, how could I help but favor such a nation? Yisa Hashem panav elecha v'yichunecha, that God is going to show us special favor because we are ready to bench, not only when we're satisfied, but even when we have only a token amount. So he suggests, the Kadosh Baruch Hu and a few others pointing to a Zohar, suggests that that is indicated by this reference of Posech es yadecha umasbia l'chol chai ratzon. Ratzon reflects the fact that it's not something of objective value that we're being provided. We are able to give that value to what HaKadosh Baruch Hu gives to us because we value the relationship. So we don't necessarily require a certain quantity. We're not looking for a lavish feast. It's simply that it's HaKadosh Baruch Hu's will that is feeding us, that we acknowledge, that we are willing to bestow upon that greater value than it otherwise has. And therefore, benching reflects that relationship, and this first bracha especially is all about that. So this insertion of the idea of poseach es yadacho masbia l'chol chai ratzon, that is brought in to represent that. A very fascinating thought. Okay, so with that, so now let's turn our attention to the second bracha. And it's the proper week for that. It's the time when this really speaks to where we are thinking at the moment, because here it is, the Shavua Shechal Bo Tisha B'Av. Now we have a fast scheduled starting in 2 days that we are mourning the disconnection from the land, our state of exile, and that's what the second bracha is all about. The Berachas Haaretz, the Talmud tells us, was authored by Yehoshua at the time that they entered the land of Israel. And we discussed as well last week that all of these historical connections, that Moshe Rabbeinu instituting the first bracha when the man fell, and Yehoshua instituting the second bracha when they entered into the land, so that adds a whole different dimension to Berachos Hamazon. It means that on the one hand, we have a Torah obligation to thank God for our sustenance, but there are also other aspects of our history that are incorporated into the experience and that stand on their own. So too, our appreciation for the land of Israel is built in to every time we recite Berachos Hamazon. And of course, this is the week when we feel that most acutely, when we are focused on our state of exile. And therefore, this bracha has special resonance for us. And indeed, the Medrash tells us that this bracha is chaviva mikulam, that this bracha is more precious than all of the other brachos because of its connection to the land, because of its referencing to our connection to Eretz Yisrael, and that bestows upon it great significance. It sounds like this was not said in the Midbar, that it was only recited once they went into the land. The Ramban, in his commentary to Chumash, sounds a little bit like they didn't bench at all until they entered into the land, because the Ramban discusses why is it that certain mitzvos only show up in Sefer Dvarim, right before we enter into the land. So he suggests that either they're mitzvos that don't come up too often, so they weren't emphasized earlier on, or they're mitzvos that weren't practiced until we entered the land, and therefore they were taught right before. So since Berachos Hamazon is indeed a frequently observed mitzvah, it comes up very often, so therefore that leaves us with the other interpretation that it wasn't practiced until they entered into the land. That rounded out the picture of what Berachos Hamazon is meant to express. But one way or another, the other indication is that they did say the first bracha in the Midbar, and it was only upon entering the land that they added this bracha, which still allows it to fit within the framework of a Torah commandment of the mitzvah min haTorah, because the pasuk that we'll read next week in Parshas Ekev states, V'yachalta v'savatu v'rachta es Hashem elokeach al ha'aretz asher nasan, that we bless God on the land that he gave for us. So essentially it's telling us that once we have acquired the land, so this mitzvah will kick in, and we will have an obligation to thank him. So this bracha has tremendous significance, and it has many themes to it. So the Gemara tells us in Brachos and Daf Mem Chesem and Beis and Mem Tesem and Aleph that if one fails to say Eretz Chemda Tova, if one doesn't mention this great desirable land, so then one is not in fulfillment. And the Gemara goes on to debate back and forth, but also to include a importance of mentioning Bris V'Torah, to mention the covenant and mention the Torah as well. That these are also crucial themes, and if we leave them out, we're missing something fundamental in the bracha. And Rabbeinu Bachi explains it's because of the connection between the land and the Torah. Again, something that we feel very acutely this week, that without the Torah, there is no land, and therefore, if we're going to focus on our connection to the land, we have to acknowledge that it's because of our observance and our appreciation of the covenant of the Torah that we are brought into the land in the first place. And the Abad Ram points to the pasuk Im lo brisi yomu v'layla chukas shamayim v'aretz lo samti. So there it's a more general reference to aretz, but the idea of aretz being connected to bris, the pasuk telling us that were it not for this covenant of the Torah, so the land would never have been placed there in the first place. So we understand that all these themes are connected, and if we're lacking that reference, so then the bracha is fundamentally flawed. In the Sefer Birchas Hamazon V'Nuscha, so he points out, again, very much in our hearts this week, that to show esteem for the land, lahokir es haaretz, to show reverence and respect and value for the land, is an obligation that we have, that is part of our mitzvah of v'halachta b'drachav, of imitating God, that we say about God in Tehillim, ki v'achar Hashem b'tzion, that God selected Zion and showed it such favor and such interest, and so too we follow in his path, and we also show it such interest and such favor, and this recitation has to express that. So the Rush, quoting Rabbeinu Hananel, following the whole discussion of the Talmud, says that if one does not include these elements of the beloved land and the bris and the Torah in the bracha, so he's not in fulfillment. And following the Rush, his son, the Tur, quotes his brother, Ben Yechiel, asking what exactly that means. Does that mean that you are not in full fulfillment of the values of this bracha? You haven't accomplished everything that you're asked to do? Or does it mean that it's fundamentally flawed and one has to recite the benching again because the bracha is completely not accomplished? So this probably depends, as the later commentaries observe, whether the mitzvah min haTorah of benching is understood to include these ideas. So the Talmud tells us that these are crucial, the recognition of the land and of the bris and of the Torah. But does that mean that it's all part of the Torah obligation, since we know the rule is that if we are not sure about a Torah obligation, we have to be machmer, we have to be stringent, and we have to say it again. So is that included within that framework, or is this an extra rabbinic obligation? So one way or another, there's an extra level here, because the Shulchan Aruch HaRav, the first Lubavitcher Rebbe, points out a greater stringency, says that it's not only that one has to recite these words in his benching, but that if one does not have intent, if one does not have the awareness of these themes when he is reciting this bracha, it also doesn't count. The point is not only to say it, but to have an appreciation mentally, to be aware of these ideas. So a lack of kavana is going to impact that fulfillment. That's a pretty high standard. And the Kadjigal of Rav, Tzvi Hirschfrimmer, in his Tshuvos, so he suggests that what would happen, he says, if you would start off saying no delucha, and you wouldn't necessarily have attention to these values, and then you remember when you start saying the next paragraph, when you say v'al hakol, so we thank God for all of this. So he suggests that you have at that point the ability to restore the theme, because the al hakol is very general, but it refers to the paragraph before. So if you're concentrating then on the values of Eretz and Torah and Bris and bring that into the meaning, so then indeed that can count as well. And he suggests further, building on that, that maybe even if you don't have the intent for the entire bracha, but you remember for the next bracha of Uvnei Yerushalayim, maybe it's possible to instill the intent into that paragraph also, because there we focus on the Beis HaMikdash and Yerushalayim, and it's that that gives Eretz Yisrael its sanctity, and therefore if that meaning is brought to that paragraph, perhaps retroactively, that can give that meaning to everything that was said before, which is also an important Tisha B'Av theme, because the whole debate of the recitation of Nachem on Tisha B'Av and the question of how can we refer to Yerushalayim as being in a state of destruction in this era when it's so beautifully built up, and Rav Soloveitchik emphasized as long as the Beis HaMikdash is not there, so then indeed it is still missing something so central. So that is consistent with this suggestion that in that next paragraph of Vnei Yerushalayim, we're able to put all of the kavana, all of the appreciation of the mitzvah of the land into that bracha and have it retroactively define what we're talking about. It's interesting, there is a halacha in Shulchan Aruch that tells us that back in the time of the Rishonim, the time of the Gemara, so they used to mix wine. The wine was too hard to drink as it is, and they would have to mix the water into it in order to make it drinkable. So the Shulchan Aruch writes in Kuf Pei Gimel that they used to do that once they got up to this bracha, that the kosher bracha that was being used for benching, so it would be brought out chai, it would be brought out in its undiluted form, and then they would mix the water in specifically at this second bracha in order to show that things get better with Eretz Yisrael, in order to show that that's an enhancement, and when we praise the land, so we also make the wine drinkable, which is a fascinating incorporation into practice, this idea of the special recognition of the land. But it's also very fascinating that, just to focus for a minute on the language, and most of the text we'll have to talk about next week, but we start off saying, Noda Lecha. The Torah quotes Maharam Rutenberg, who suggested maybe we should say Noda Lecha, that we will thank you, because Noda Lecha sounds as if we're saying we will thank to you someone else. So it's a little bit of a strange language, but our practice is indeed to say Noda Lecha. It's a biblical format, as some of the commentaries point out, but it's also a language of plural. And that's interesting, because it's one thing we talk about tefillah b'tzibur, so that's by its nature plural, but benching is not necessarily a communal text. It's something the individuals say also. So Rav David Cohen, in one of his svarim, suggests that the idea is that we are recognizing that all of the themes of this bracha, Eretz Yisrael, and the Bris, and the Torah, these are all things that bring us together as a people. And therefore, we highlight that when we praise God, we are blessing Him as the communal unit. And that's, of course, the core theme of this week, that as we look to restore the unity that's necessary for the Jewish people, the idea of that we are connected and that we are one, and the achdus that is necessary to bring back in order to reverse the galus and to undo the sin eschinam, that's essentially the opening message of this bracha, that because of the Oretz and because of the Bris V'Torah, so we are joined together, and therefore we use this plural language of Noda Lecha, we are able to praise you. A very beautiful thought as we continue towards Tisha B'Av. And I'll just close with one other note that's also relevant. So the idea of using the language of Chemda, the land that is desired. So the Shibboleth HaLeket quotes from his brother that Yehoshua authored this bracha, as the Talmud tells us. He used the word Chemda because he saw from his Rebbe, he saw from Moshe Rabbeinu, how deeply he wanted to go into the land, and how the Avos wanted to be buried there, and how Moshe Rabbeinu wanted to be brought in, and wanted to be able to come in, and that's of course the opening lines of this week's parsha of the Eschanan, is Moshe's entreaty to be able to reverse the decision, and to be able to enter into the land, and if we are able to have that same chemda that Moshe Rabbeinu had, if we are able to feel as strongly that our connection to the land is so important to us and is something that we want so deeply, so then indeed we may find that we could reverse this galus, and perhaps by next year, if not by this week, maybe we'll be able to bench with kavana not only all the other days of the year, but we'll be able to bench with full kavana on Tisha B'Av as well. So I wish you all a meaningful and inspiring Tisha B'Av, and it should be the last time that we ever have to fast on Tisha B'Av, and by next year we should be benching. Thank you so much.
Thank you.
Thank you.
Thank you so much. Beautiful.
Thank you. Thank you.
Thank you, Rabbi.
Thank you.
Thank you, Rabbi Yashikor. God bless you.
God bless you. Thank you.
Easy and meaningful fast.
To you as well.